Hey guys, this is Beth Golay. And before we get started with Marginalia, I just wanted to say that KMUW's podcast platform is made possible by High Touch Technologies, a software technology and business communications company that provides products, services, and support to all industries. High Touch brings the human touch to technology with a world-class team of industry experts. Learn more at hightouchtechnologies.com. And now, here's Marginalia.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia, notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to the
main topic in the margin of a book.
Kate Williams is a self-described 90s kid. If you don't believe her, a look at the pop culture references sprinkled throughout her new YA book, The Babysitter's Coven, should convince you. The book itself is a product of Williams making a what-if joke about the Babysitter's Club, a series she read and loved as a kid. Kate Williams recently joined me in studio to talk about the book, pop culture, fashion, and so much more. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Well, I like to give a description of what a book is about, but then, you know, lately, especially with a book like this, I worry about spoilers. So I'm going to have you tell our listeners what The Babysitter's Coven is about.
Well, it's about a 17-year-old babysitter who finds out that she is, you know, super-powered, supernatural, she's kind of a witch, she has access to this whole realm of magic. And it's to protect the innocent and keep evil at bay.
And so they started a babysitter's club based on the book series, The Babysitter's Club. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I had the idea for The Babysitter's Coven for a long time before I even started writing it because it was kind of my joke book. You know, it's like I was like a 90s teenager, so I grew up like reading The Babysitter's Club. You know, I would like read them like probably one a day, you know, when I was like, not necessarily a teenager, but like a preteen, like in junior high. And it's so funny because I read them nonstop. If you asked me today to tell you what the plot of any of them were, I'd be like, I don't know. You know, there were kids and there were problems. But then I always like, I also thought it was kind of funny that babysitters were also always this kind of trope or popular character in horror movies. You know, they're always finding themselves in like horrible situations. And so it was kind of this joke that I had of like, oh, well, what if the babysitters fought back because they were witches? And so that was kind of where this idea came from. And in the book, they have, or two of the main characters start their own babysitting club when they're in junior high, based off of the books. And that was something that I literally did. You know, in the Babysitter's Club, the books, they have a regular meeting every week and they go to someone's house and it's like they have office hours. So people call to schedule, you know, babysitting jobs during those times when they're all there meeting. And so I remember specifically, and I don't remember how many girls we had. We probably had like five or six. But, you know, like we had our babysitter's club and we'd go to someone's house and we'd like sit in the bedroom and wait for the phone to ring. And of course the phone is not ringing, you know, because it's like 1 hour. It's like 3 to 4 p.m. on a Wednesday or something, you know. It's like no parent is calling to schedule babies. But so it's like we tried that, you know, and it never like took off. But I think probably that was a very universal experience that like so many people who read the Babysitter's Club books were like, oh, we're going to start a Babysitter's Club, you know.
So the book is set in Kansas. Mm-hmm. It does name that it's city, and is it Spring River?
Yeah, it's just a made-up city.
Is it based on any certain city?
No, I think that the Babysitter's Club books, they're in Stony Brook, Connecticut, you know? So it's just kind of like, again, a random combination of words, you know, that just sounded like a place that it could be anywhere. And I think that that is part of, like, the appeal of the original Babysitter's Club books is that it wasn't set in an immediately identifiable city where you're not like, oh, it's like New York, it's Los Angeles, it's Chicago. So I think that you could read something that was happening in Stony Brook, Connecticut, and think that it could happen in your town. And that's kind of what I liked about setting this in the Midwest and setting it in a made-up town was it's not like people are going to have these immediate associations with like, oh, I've been there, I know what that is like.
But you are from Wichita.
Yes, I am from Wichita.
So tell us, you know, where'd you go to school? Because that seems to be the question, right?
Well, I went to Wichita North High. So I graduated in 1998. And I think, you know, it's really funny because, you know, my generation is, we're kind of on that cusp of like, we had the internet towards the end of high school, but it wasn't this like prevalent thing throughout, you know, our whole like teenage years. Like, we were like on AOL Instant Messenger, and I remember like, it was just getting, by the time I graduated from high school, it was just getting to the point where you could like look things up on the internet. You know, like if you wanted to do research about something, you could just start to like, you know, look it up on AOL. And so I feel like, you know, my high school years in Kansas were like these kind of like very typical like American like teenage years. You know, it's like, I was a lifeguard and we'd go to Sonic and we'd get cherry limeades and we'd go to the mall and like, you know, in the summer, like we'd all meet up and hang out in a parking lot, you know. And so I feel like it was just this very kind of, yeah, movie picturesque, like, you know, teenage years. And it's funny because I talk to a lot of my friends now who grew up in all of these different places and they're like, wow, you sound like you had way more fun in high school. And I was like, you know, I think we did because it was still like pre-internet. So you kind of were making your own fun. And yeah, it was just really great.
Talk to me a little bit about your journey as a writer. I mean, yeah. how did you come up with the idea for this book? And what has that publishing process been like for you?
Well, you know, like I said, like this was my joke book forever. And I mean, I think it literally started with a tweet probably 10 years ago, since long deleted that Twitter account. But, you know, where I was like, oh, someday I'm going to write a young adult novel called The Babysitter's Coven. Because it just seemed so obvious to me. It's like you have the Babysitter's Club, you have a coven, which is like a club of witches. You know, babysitters are always in these dangerous situations in horror movies. Like it just seemed like, you know, kind of like the perfect nexus. But I feel like a lot of writers go through this, but I think especially like a lot of women writers go through this. I know a lot of women readers go through this where you have this idea that you want to be taken seriously. And so there's like a certain kind of writing or there's a certain kind of book that is what you read or what you write to be taken seriously. And so in my 20s, I was always like, oh, I knew I wanted to write fiction, but I felt like literary fiction was what everybody talked about. And like, that was the kind of like book that was taken seriously. And I didn't read a lot of young adult fiction when I was in my 20s. You know, I would like power through like these contemporary fiction novels that I just found like horribly depressing and they weren't fun to read. But I was like, well, this is what everyone's reading. So, you know, it's like, this is what I need to read to be able to participate in this conversation about reading. So like that was kind of like what I thought. But at the same time, like I was always working for these magazines or these companies that catered to young women. So I wrote for a magazine called Nylon for a long time. Like I write for Cosmopolitan. I worked for Urban Outfitters. I worked for Calvin Klein. So it's like I had this idea that like, oh, this was the kind of fiction that I needed to write. But in my day job and all my other work, like everything was like really fun and snappy and, you know, like very high energy. And so finally kind of in, you know, my early 30s, I was like, well, why don't you just try young adult? You know, that's clearly like what you're most familiar with, like that voice and that audience. And also like I was a huge reader as a teenager and preteen, you know, and some of the books that I read when I was a young adult are really like they were so formative, you know, and I still reference them now, like when I talk about stuff. So it seemed like that was just going to be the genre that worked for me the most. And then I tried to write something that was very like serious and like very emotional. And I just worked on that for a couple years and I just like never really got anywhere with it. I think because like it just didn't feel like me. And I still was like, at that point, writing to what I thought I needed to be writing as opposed to what I really wanted to write. And so finally, I was just like, okay, well, you know, you had this idea for the Babysitter's Coven and it's not going anywhere. And surprisingly enough, no one else has written a book like about this. So why don't you just try that? So I started working on it in 2015, I think. And even once I got to that point, it was like still a process. You know, it's like I wrote numerous drafts, and, you know, then by the time I got to a point where someone was, you know, I was ready to have someone read it, you know, I'd already written like three or four drafts, probably like hundreds of thousands of words, like over, you know, 2 or 3 years. I, you know, had hand selected like my 5 readers that I was going to have read it and give me feedback. And so I sent it all to them, and I was just, you know, like waiting, and like nobody finished it because it was literally that bad. Like, and, you know, I think like the thing that I had done was I was super cocky about it because I was like, I'm a writer. I know how to write a book. Like, this is what I'm going to do. So I didn't read any books about I read one book about writing, which was the Stephen King on Writing book, which where he's like, oh, don't draft anything. Don't do outlines. Just write. It'll come to you, you know? And so I was like, Stephen King says it'll just come to me. And it never did. Like, and I had an agent by that point. I'd gotten an agent off of like my first 50 pages. And so, you know, she was anxiously awaiting the full draft. And, you know, so she read it. And, you know, none of my readers finished it. None of them were able to get through it. But my agent, it was her job. She had to read it. And she came back and she was like, yeah, like this is going to need a lot of work. And so at that point, like I really just like I bought all the plotting books, you know, like I read a million like I downloaded worksheets. I like, you know, printed stuff out and like, you know, mapped it on a wall. Like I made like Google spreadsheets. Like I got really into like plotting and, you know, kind of like pacing and story structure, because that was the thing that I didn't know how to do. That's the thing that's totally different with fiction that you don't ever have to worry about, like when you're writing like nonfiction, because the story's already there. You just have to figure out the best way to tell it. So it's like, you know, I could write dialogue for days and like, you know, setting descriptions, but my characters didn't do anything, you know, and the things that they did do were like totally implausible and, you know, nothing flowed and nothing made sense. I wrote an essay about this a while back because like, that experience was like really humiliating, you know, because like I just like feel like this kind of sense of shame. Like I was like, oh my God, like I've been working on this for years. Like I've been talking about this and it's bad. You know, like it is really bad. And I think that, you know, the thing that saved me with that was I already had been working on it for 3 years, you know, and I already had put hundreds of thousands of words into it. And I was like, well, you can't quit now. So I really like I went back and I think I rewrote it from pretty much front to back. Like there were maybe like a couple of, you know, scenes where I was able to keep most of it. You know, I really reworked my characters and did that for about 9 months. And then by that point, I was, I think, 4 months pregnant. So I was like, okay, you know, my agent is amazing, you know, and she was like, I don't think this is ready, but, you know, I think we should go out with it. And I was like, absolutely, because I knew that, you know, it had been like my hobby and my passion project. And I was like, once I have a baby, I'm not going to have that time. So I need to have these like external deadlines and I need to have a contract associated with it or else I'm never going to get the time to do it. So she sent it out on Halloween and she sent it to 33 editors. And I remember being like, okay, 33, I just need 3% success rate. You know, like I was like, I just need like one person to want to publish it. And, you know, that was like really what I thought was like, it wasn't about like money or anything. Like I just wanted someone to take this like Word document that I had that I'd been like just revising night and day for 5 years and like turn it into a book. And so, yeah, so she sent it out on Halloween, and then I think it had sold by the middle of December. Wow. So it was very exciting, yeah.
So, I mean, this is, I mean, it's obvious from how the book ends, and it's obvious from where it says coming in 2020. Mm-hmm. This is a series.
Yeah.
Do you outline now? I mean, do you have the series in place? Do you know how many books, what's going to happen? I mean, talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, right now, the only guarantee is for the second book. So the second book will come out in fall of 2020. And I'm in the process of my second revisions of that. So one draft has already been sent to the publisher, and I've gotten feedback now, and I'm working on incorporating that feedback from my editor. But yeah, now, like, before I even write the first sentence, you know, I have a massive Google document that's a spreadsheet where I, like, plot out every scene, and every column of the spreadsheet has, like, the date of when it takes place, where it takes place, what characters are in it, what happens in the scene, and whatever other kind of notes that I need to have. And a lot of times I'll get this idea for a scene and I'm like, okay, so I really want to write that scene. That sounds super fun. Where is that going to go? So I have this massive spreadsheet. And what I really love about, you know, doing it in Google Docs is you can just drag things. So it's like I'll have all of these columns where each column represents a scene, and then, you know, I'll just, like, switch them around forever until I have, like, you know, the whole book plotted out scene by scene from beginning to end. And I don't necessarily stick to that, like, verbatim, but it's a nice guideline to have while you're working. And, like, Ernest Hemingway, he talked about, and I think it was in A Movable Feast that he talked about this, but how he would only stop writing for the day when he knew what was going to happen next. And that's something that I think is really, really helpful, because if you sit down and you're starting to write and you don't know what's supposed to happen, like, it's never going to come, you know? And so I feel like you kind of have to have, or at least I have to have, that outline that just kind of keeps me from getting stuck.
You mentioned earlier that you had to give up, like, writing something serious to write mm-hmm. something fun. But it felt to me like there were still some serious aspects of this book that you were able to keep. And I'm thinking especially of, I'm thinking of Esme and her mother. And so was there any, like, gravity in writing any of those scenes?
Yeah, I think there was. And it's something that I really tried to get right. You know, it's like we also had, like, a diversity reader read for, you know, Esme's mother to make sure that that was handled, like, you know, appropriately. Because I don't want to give, you know, anything away, but, you know, there are certain familial issues that they're dealing with there. And I think when you think about, like, any comedy that sticks with you, or, you know, stories that are really emotional, I think the humor hits so much harder when there is that emotional core. You know, two examples that I think of recently are, like, Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it's like those movies are, like, they're really funny, but then there is, like, this kind of emotional core about family and, like, what you'll do for your family and, like, loyalty. And, you know, Stranger Things is another one. Like, it's super funny in some ways, and, like, you know, there's all this crazy stuff happening, but then it comes back to, you know, friendship and loyalty and, like, what people are willing to do for each other. And I think that having something that can be really funny, but then also touch on something that's kind of serious, like, both of those make the other resonate so much more than if you have something that's, you know, just one or just the other.
You mentioned, like, Guardians of the Galaxy and Stranger Things, and you wove a lot of pulp culture in this book. Are you a big fan of all of these movies and shows that you write about?
I am. I mean, I really love pop culture, and I've always really liked, you know, looking at it, but also kind of, like, dissecting it and pulling out themes. I mean, that's where, like, the whole idea for the book came from, was, like, this idea of all of these different, like, pop cultural tropes, like the teenage witch and the babysitter and, like, the horror movie heroine, and then, like, the superpowered teenage girl, whether you're talking about, like, Buffy or, like, Alex Mack or, like, you know, all of these things. I love pop culture, and I love seeing how people react to it and, like, what resonates with people, you know, in terms of, like, oh, people really love this series, or, like, you know, they really get into, like, this character. And I always say that I think I'm secretly a cosplayer at heart, but I'm just way too lazy to ever do anything like that. And I feel like I'm kind of like that with a lot of stuff. Like, I'm too lazy to be a super fan, but I really appreciate, like, fandom and when people, like, get really into these certain things and put a lot of effort and energy into kind of honoring and emulating them.
Well, I also like the way you handled your character's knowledge of all of these pulp culture things. In almost, it felt more natural and more real. Like she might say something about, have you been eating a lot of peas lately? And it wasn't so like this overt over explanation of what you were talking about. Yeah. But anybody who was reading it either would absolutely know what you're talking about or at least say, oh, that must be part of The Exorcist. I should go back and watch that.
And I think that, you know, I think about like myself as a teenager and, you know, I think adolescence is a time where you're like really figuring out like who you are and what you're about and like how you want to present to the world. And I think pop culture like gives you a lot of these touch points to align yourself with. You're like, I am this, I am not this, you know, and that's what a lot of these references are. It's like this kind of coded language to identify you to other people who are into the same things that you are. You know, it's like I read like a lot of, I'm super into rock bios and I love like any like trashy like autobiography. But a lot of times like I read these and people talk about like, oh, like I was reading a book, recently by Alice Bagg, who was like the lead singer of this LA punk band called The Bags, you know, and she's like talking about like she was a huge Elton John fan when she was a teenager. So she would like make her own Elton John t-shirts and she would like try to dress like him, you know, and she eventually met her first bandmate because I don't remember what t-shirt the girl was wearing, but they show up someplace and like someone's wearing a band t-shirt and she loves this band. So it's like they become friends, you know, and so it's like I think that, you know, these pop cultural things that we identify with are actually, you know, it's not just surface. It's a way of saying, like, this is who I am. And, like, it's a way of helping you kind of, like, find your tribe, I think, especially for teenagers.
Talk to me a little bit about the way fashion plays a role in this book, because you are quite knowledgeable in that regard.
Well, you know, I joked earlier that I'd read all the Babysitter's Club, and I cannot recall the plot of any of them, but what I remember was Claudia Kishi's outfits, you know, and Claudia was far and away like the coolest babysitter, and there was much made about her being an artist and her crazy outfits, you know, like she would wear these just insane combinations and she would make earrings out of anything, you know, so it'd be like earrings made out of like little plastic toys or bottle caps. And so that was like one of the things that like really stuck out to me about the Babysitter's Club books. And so I feel like having my characters be into fashion was like a little bit of a way to pay homage to that. But I also thought about it, you know, in terms of like, you know, me being a pre-internet teenager, like I kind of knew I wanted to dress a certain way, but I didn't know what that way was, you know, because like I didn't know. I was like, oh, I want to look cooler than I look, but I didn't know how to make that happen. And I remember, you know, when fashion blogging first kind of exploded, it was around like 2007, 2008. That was when I got like my first job in fashion. I started working for Urban Outfitters and I was running their blog. And we're working with all of these, like, you know, a lot of times teenage girls like who were in the middle of nowhere and had these fashion blogs. And it just blew my mind because I was like, oh, yeah, like now they have an audience and they have a way to connect with other people who are into the same things that they are. Whereas like pre-internet, like, you know, you could be like a teenager in like a small town and you could dress a certain way and no one would like it, or you might get made fun of, or you wouldn't get any feedback. But like the internet opened up this whole like network of people who were going to appreciate what you were wearing. You could take inspiration from them. They would take inspiration from you. And yeah, I just kind of thought about like how that would be like such a game changer to, you know, just encourage you to really like put effort into what you're wearing and like, you know, try to dress differently if you kind of had all of this like inspiration to pull from.
So what does your audience look like and what do you hope that they might take away from this book?
I guess I kind of see like, you know, a double demographic, like obviously like today's teenagers, but then also people like me who you know, we're 90s teenagers. And it's also really, it's super helpful for me that, like, everyone's into the 90s these days. So it's like my sister's babysitter, who's now a senior in high school, you know, she wears a T-shirt that has a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio from Romeo and Juliet on it, you know, and like I was on a plane like a while back and the teenage girl behind me was wearing like the same T-shirt, you know, so it's like these Winona Ryder is on Stranger Things, you know, so it's like a lot of these 90s references are being picked up already by like teens today, which I think is super fun. And I think, you know, I just want people to be entertained. You know, I kind of call it like cozy magic. You know, like I kind of think of it as an escape, especially because, you know, so much of what teenagers are dealing with now and just what people are dealing with in general, like the world is a very intense place. And I think that, you know, you need kind of, you know, entertainment and a distraction in a way that's not just like instantly like scrolling Facebook, you know, or like scrolling Instagram. And yeah, that's what I hope is that like this book will like make people laugh and, you know, it'll kind of just be like a way for them to entertain themselves. And I hope that they'll be a little bit inspired to put together some cool outfits.
That was Kate Williams, author of the book, The Babysitter's Coven, which was published by Delacorte Press. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at kmuw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.